Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
This is Issues 2024. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Diana Shun, CEO, Child Advocacy Center for Sedgwick County. Hey, welcome to Issues 2024, Diana.
Thank you so much.
Nice to have you on. I think we decided we had you on about 10 years ago or something. And so we're right back in there. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. What does this mean to the Child Advocacy Center? Is there anything special going on?
Sure, there's a lot of things going on in April. Of course, the most important thing is to recognize that child abuse occurs throughout the year, but April is a month that we have the opportunity to really sit back and make sure that we are doing our job in public education and information. Although we offer education and information throughout the year, throughout April we do provide an education opportunity each day. And so if you go onto our website, you can see information about education that you can attend in person, online, in combinations thereof. So we have just the opportunity to really raise awareness throughout the month and do a variety of different community activities as well.
When was the center started? Let me get a little background here.
Sure. We started the center in 2009. So, 2008, sorry. We had a task force that met for 2 years prior, starting in 2006, and the task force then determined that we would move forward with the development of a child advocacy center at that point in 2008.
Do you have a mission statement?
We do. I don't have it memorized exactly.
Well, but paraphrase then, huh?
Yeah, our job is obviously to be able to promote safety for children, and we do that through our community partners and our partnerships as we work through the investigative process.
That sounds pretty good. It sounds like you've got it pretty well memorized there. And you say you started in 2008 or 9, and have you been with the CAC ever since then? Or?
I have. I started in this position already at the very beginning, so we had the opportunity to move from one employee, and now we have 21, so it's exciting. I actually just posted a job today, so that'll make number 22. So.
Oh, and what did you do before that then?
I was the director of the Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner Program at Via Christi, so working as a forensic nurse and doing the sexual abuse evaluations for 15 years in that position. So that really is what those expertise, what kind of brought me into this position, and sitting on the task force then developed a strong interest in being able to have the opportunity to start this new program.
Sounds like you had an excellent background then for what this job that you're doing now. Now, how many children will you help in a year?
We see approximately 2,000 children a year, so kind of a wide variety of ages, and we see, you know, significant a number of those are under the age of 12, and so we have an opportunity to obviously really try to provide safety in a variety of different ways. About 70% of the cases that we see have sexual abuse in nature, 20% serious physical abuse. And that's kind of hard to define a little bit, but basically anything that has serious injuries, so broken bones, abdominal trauma, head trauma might be examples of those kinds of cases. And then the remainder of the other 10% would be children that are runaways, children who are human trafficking, maybe children who have been exposed to drugs in the home or have witnessed some type of violence within the home.
Have you add in family members and others involved? You touch a lot of people in a year's time.
We see another about 1,500 non-offending caregivers in a variety of different services through advocacy, and through our therapy programming.
If the kids that you're dealing with, are they in a system, in and out of your system, or do you refer them to somebody else? How does that work?
All of our children come to us because there has been a prior or current law enforcement or a DCF report. And so there is already a report of concern. And once that report is forwarded to the Exploited and Missing Child Unit, which is our three-way partnership between the Wichita Police Department, Sedgwick County Sheriff's Office, and the Department for Children and Families, when EMCU gets that case assigned, then they get a referral then to come to the Child Advocacy Center. And that starts the forensic interview process, and that's where our services then, we work together with all of our different partners to be able to really enhance the communication that's already occurring, but to be able to make sure that we are working efficiently and effectively with one another. So really trying to make our building be the one location that families need to go in these kinds of circumstances without having to travel throughout the community to receive assistance.
Is the center a nonprofit?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The center is a nonprofit, and we do serve all of Sedgwick County, so
you're
it's
non-profit.
A bit confusing.
You're a nonprofit, but you have to have money come from somewhere. How do you get your funding?
Sure. There's a variety of different ways that we receive our funding. Our partner agencies that are located within our facility, so Wichita City of Wichita, Sedgwick County Sheriff, and the state all help with partner assistance to be able to keep the lights on and remove the snow and keep the place clean, those kinds of things. But then our programming funding really comes then again from a host of different kinds of resources. But we do have local funding through the county. We also have state funding, and we have federal funding, and then we do a significant amount of fundraising. So we have a variety of grants, from private grants to corporations that get involved, and then individual donors.
I was going to say, about you got somebody that's writing grant proposals or
yeah, there's several of us that work on grant proposals on a regular basis. Yes.
So the facilities you have are they adequate? Do you need anything as far as buildings and physical plants?
Well, we had been previously located in the state office building where we started out.
Okay.
And then in 2011, we started a capital campaign at that time, and we were able to purchase the former Lincoln Elementary School building in 2013. We renovated that and moved in 2016, and we find ourselves now in a situation where we are short of space. So we are looking to add on to the facility at this time to be able to really meet the needs of the community, better serve the children that we see. And a big part of that programming change will be the opportunity for growth in our advocacy and our therapy programming.
And you said how many employees you've got? 21?
21, almost 22.
Is this thing where you need more people?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, we do.
Everybody seems to have that problem or that challenge.
Well, and a lot of ours right now is finding consistent funding, honestly. Many of our grant opportunities are wonderful grant opportunities, but many of them might be, one project or one activity in particular.
Yeah.
So to find consistent funding for staffing can be a bit of a challenge from time to time, but that's something that we continually are looking for and working hard to get.
When you talk about staffing, though, you're not talking about somebody who's just going to come in and learn while you're there. You've got to have somebody who's got some pretty good qualifications, I would think.
Yes. Yeah.
They have to know what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Education is a huge part of the responsibilities of our staff. All of them have a tremendous amount of experience in education when they come to us, and then we continue to educate them throughout their time with us because activities, needs, opportunities continue to change as things move along, and we want to make sure that we're reaching the children and what they need. So,
do you get help from volunteers?
We do. We have volunteers that help us in a couple of different ways. They can help us with fundraising events, but other volunteer jobs can include helping babysit while other children are receiving services. It could be stocking our donation center, cleaning up the yard, all different kinds of activities. So there's one-time activities, and then there's ongoing activities. We have a group that comes in every month and stuffs our newsletter. So they're the newsletter crew.
I've done some of that before for reunions and whatnot.
There you go.
I'm not going to volunteer.
Yeah. And then we have Papa Popcorn. We have one volunteer that comes in and makes popcorn for the whole building and delivers it. So
there's all different kinds of opportunities.
Like
once a week or once a month? Or?
Oh, it just kind of depends on what his schedule might look like, but usually once a month.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what is there a role for? Is there a role for foster care in what you're doing? And how does that impact you, if at all?
Sure. Yeah. Foster care is one of the things that we're always looking at. When our children come in for forensic interviews, approximately 10% of those are needing to go into police protective custody, where they do not have someone who is capable of providing a safe space for them to be able to return or to keep them separated from the offender. And so in those cases where they go into foster care, then that roughly 10%, even a smaller percent of those then may end up in the foster care system. But any time that we're looking at children going into the foster care system, that's something that we want to continue to look at, review, see where and what happens in relation to that. We work very closely with the Department for Children and Families, DCF, in really reviewing, and many other community partners in really reviewing what happens when children are in the foster care system, and is that really the best opportunity for them? And one of the things we did actually just yesterday, we did a data walk with DCF and a variety of other community members to be able to really look at what are our outcomes related to children that are in foster care when we look at finishing school, homelessness, being able to keep a job, get a job. What are we doing in relation to that? And what we keep coming back to is that foster care is not the optimal circumstance. If we can find a protective parent, a protective individual, whether that's a relative, someone who they know and trust, a teacher, something to that effect, children thrive in those environments much, much more. Because they have a trusted relationship with that person. And even though we may have wonderful foster parents out there, that connection is still very, very different between the foster care child and the foster parent. And that trust factor is oftentimes very challenging in that situation. And so we're really looking systems-wide, statewide, about how are we handling foster care and what can we do differently?
Well, I will admit that I don't think I could ever be a foster parent. It would take a special person or persons, I would think, to do that. But are there enough people out there that would like to be foster parents?
No, I think they're always looking for foster parents. Oh, okay. I think that's part of the challenge, too, is just really finding high-quality numbers of foster parents. But again, I think as we look at the research and as we really look at the data related to the outcomes, we also have to recognize that that still is not the best option for children. So even when we have fabulous foster parents out there, we are still not seeing overall, and again, this is not a case specific, but overall, we're still not seeing the outcomes that we should or want to see in relation to that.
Does the state of Kansas do enough in this area? Are they, I don't know, how can I put that, active enough? Are they putting enough money into this? How does that work?
I think we're actively doing things right now, yes. Have we historically? I don't know. I think that's always something for debate. But I think we are looking at those opportunities clearly now, particularly in Sedgwick County, because our numbers are dramatically different than any other county, even the most populated other counties within the state and the outcomes that we're looking at. And so I think when you really look at those stark differences in outcomes, you're kind of put into a position where you have to say something has to change.
So how does Sedgwick County compare to the rest of the state then?
We're not fabulous in our outcomes when it comes to foster kids. And so I think that that's one of the things in particular that we're looking at. And again, those are not the largest majority of the cases that we see, but nonetheless, it's still a significant population, and we need to play our part in that safety to the best of our ability.
You're listening to Issues 2024 on the Odyssey radio stations, and our guest is Diana Shun, CEO, Child Advocacy Center, Sedgwick County. Let's talk about your services for just a little bit. I looked on the webpage, and everybody's got a webpage now. I'm looking at a drop down that says advocacy. That's all it says. So what does that mean?
Yeah, our advocates are trained to be able to work with families and provide crisis intervention and support services. So our advocates meet with families when they very first come in for a forensic interview with our law enforcement and DCF partners. And they start that assessment piece right from the very beginning. Do they need referrals for medical, for therapy, for changing the locks on the house? Do they need shelter? Do they need clothing? Changing the electric bill, paying the rent? What are the assistance pieces that they need? And so we're that really short-term stopgap assistance. And then we can help connect them into other long-term assisting services within the community. I think that the most important thing from a CAC standpoint is we were designed to not be duplicating other services that already exist within the community, but to more efficiently and effectively utilize those services. The advocates are a prime example of that.
What is Buford's pause for learning?
Yeah, Martha Buford passed several years ago, and Martha played a significant part in the role of the Child Advocacy Center and was involved from the very beginning, a strong supporter. And so we're very fortunate that Bob Buford made a donation to the CAC for us to be able to start our therapy dog program. And so Buford's Paws for Healing is our dog programming. And so we currently have three dogs in the building. Remy is our comfort dog that works in the advocate area. And then we have two therapy dogs. Odie has been there for quite some time, and that's the dog in particular that has been named after Martha Buford and is in our therapy area. And then Margot has recently passed her therapy dog testing, and so she is in the building as well. And so we're just really excited. Staff love, of course, to have the dogs around, but the children thrive in those situations. One of the Margot was in a room with a teenager not that long ago, and the teenager just laid down on the floor and cuddled up with Margot and just started talking. And that's how therapy is supposed to work when you have a therapy dog.
I imagine they can be very helpful.
Yes.
For the kid in that situation.
Yeah. Odie's gone to court and participated in court as well, provided some comfort. And the child could just keep petting Odie the whole time. And
Didn't
testify, no. But certainly was there as a comfort to the child. So
when I do a drop-down box that says education, what does that include then?
Yeah, education is a variety of different things that we offer, from mandatory reporting to a community awareness to all different kinds of education that can give you information about what is child abuse, how do you see it, how do you recognize it, when do you report it, what to expect if you report it. If I see this change of behavior in my child, what might that mean? And so there's all different kinds of education opportunities throughout all year long, but certainly throughout the month of April is an opportunity for many different kinds of involvement. We also have a child safety fair this year that we are partnering with the Wichita Area Sexual Assault Center to be able to provide on April 21 from 1 to 4:30. It might be 1:30 to 4:30. I may have that wrong. But at O.J. Watson Park. And so certainly would encourage folks to come out for the safety fair and just learn all different kinds of things about fire safety to protecting your child's safety. So lots of education opportunities and a great chance to just get out and about on a Sunday.
You have a drop-down labeled legal. I'm thinking about what you've been telling me. And if you investigate something Yeah, the person whose home it is, you have to be careful not to. I mean, somebody could be innocent that you're talking to you, but you've got experienced law enforcement people, folks like that.
Absolutely, our law enforcement are well trained to be able to really work through that investigative process and be able to put the pieces together. We are also fortunate that we're partnering with the district attorney's office, and we have representatives from the DA's office in our building as well, so they can be used as consultation and really just run cases by them. They can have case presentations done to them, questions about search warrants or affidavits, those kinds of things. And so really, again, just that partnership is to make sure that we've got the best information possible available to us, and then our folks are well trained to be able to put that information together and present that then for potential charges to the DA's office.
You mentioned on the webpage medical evaluations, mental health, medical and mental. So these kids can be they come in there with some real health challenges and injuries and so forth.
Yeah, we are super fortunate to be able to also partner with the KU and their pediatric department to be able to provide us with a full-time forensic nurse on site. So medical evaluations can be done on site on non-acute or injuries that don't require emergency treatment. Those patients would still need to go to the emergency department. But otherwise, our nurse can take care of those patients on site, and they would be able to receive those services there.
So. Can you profile a typical child abuse victim, or is there any such thing?
No, I don't know that there is such a thing. I think that's
maybe the most common thing you see, something like that.
No, that's a great question. You know, one of the things that we look at in particular with child abuse and behavioral changes in particular are behaviors that could happen for any kind of stressful situation. So maybe a recent move, a new baby in the house, mom and dad are divorced, someone's incarcerated. I mean, all of those are stress factors that can mimic and display the same kinds of stress reactions from children that are in abusive situations as well. But we oftentimes see children shying away from familiar places or things that they used to like to do, especially if the offender's in those particular areas. Isolation, or they could become super outgoing. So changes of behavior, changes in ability to concentrate, schooling, just different kind of stressful situations, abdominal pain, headaches, eating disorders, anything that we think of about how we react when we're stressed, children do it in very similar manners, just in their own interpretation of that. And so, again, any of those situations may not be related to an abusive situation, but we would hope that people at least consider that as a possibility.
Is there such a thing as a typical child abuser?
Child abusers are extremely crafty at what they do, and that's why so many people don't believe that they are guilty, because they intentionally befriend those around them. They are the good person. They are the volunteer. They are the helper. They are, people that people like. And so, I mean, how many times have we heard people when they're like, oh, they're such a nice person? Yeah, they sure are. And that's why they do exactly what they're doing, to be able to be perceived that way. So I think that oftentimes we would like to believe that they look and act differently so that we can pick them out. But the unfortunate thing is that's oftentimes not how it works. And they have a great way of rationalizing and justifying what it is that they do. And they can make other adults believe whatever their scenario oftentimes is. And that's why the child oftentimes looks incredible.
You know, if somebody listening right now thinks they need some help, maybe you've got somebody who says, hey, I might need some help on this. What's the first call? Is it the law enforcement, or is it to you, or who?
No, first call really should be to, if you believe a child is in an immediate danger, the child has to go home to where the offender is, or is living in the home where the offender is, which is in the largest majority of our cases. In those situations, we would want you to call 911 to be able to get immediate assistance. We wouldn't want there to be a delay in seeking assistance at that point. But certainly, another option then is to be able to call DCF, to be able to call the 1-800-922-5330 hotline and be able to make that report to DCF. And there really is nothing wrong with making both reports, because it really enters the system in both ways to be able to make sure that report is moving through. Our partner agencies, they work together, law enforcement and social services. But not in every community does that happen exactly the same way. And so making a report to both is really one of the safest ways to be able to make sure that a report is going to be followed through and to really get that investigation piece started.
You've been doing this quite a long time. Why?
I think we see great outcomes.
What gets you going there, I guess? Huh?
Yeah, we see great outcomes. We see children being in difficult situations and coming out in much better situations. And I think that's what keeps us going. We see our therapy programming really making a huge difference in the life of children and their families, to be able to provide them support services And I think that that's another part that really just keeps us moving forward.
Oh, listen, thanks for being with me again on this show. And maybe we'll do it sooner than the next 10 years, Diana.
Sounds great.
You're doing great work. Thank you for doing that. Diana Shun, CEO, Child Advocacy Center of Sedgwick County. That's all for this edition of Issues 2024. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.